This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Sunday across Kansas City in the Midwest. Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. My name is Brad Porter. Follow me on Twitter at Brad K. Porter. Jed Marshall is producing here in the Rally House Studios. I like that one. I like that track.
You like Deltron 3000?
It's kind of a like a harpsichord mixed in there.
Yeah,
I know it's a keyboard, but it sounds like a harpsichord.
Deltron's underground hip-hop at its finest. If you like the Gorillaz, I don't know if you know them.
I do not. I've probably heard them, but I wouldn't
here,
know.
Here, let me pull up some Gorillaz.
Okay. We'll discuss our musical tastes here. We've got an open couple of segments here to kind of kick around some different things. And while Jed looks for that, I kind of...
So you know this, obviously.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Can't help but know that it's played. Right. Was played all the time.
Deltron is a member of the Gorillaz.
Okay. Gotcha.
But yeah, gotcha. He's awesome.
I don't really want to start with the Royals, but we didn't get into it very much last hour, other than talking about the reunion of the great Royals outfielders, a great Royals outfield group of Carlos Beltran, Johnny Damon, and Jermaine Dye. And then, of course, Willie Wilson was out there, Amos Otis. Could you have better Royals outfielders from their history all together on the field at the same time? I think not. And that's a ridiculous collection of talent there. But the Royals lose 8-3 in Game 2 of their series with the Yankees. Josh Briscoe, who is coming up at noon with baseball tonight to get you set for Game 3 of the series, just walked in here a few minutes ago. So he's getting ready to put that show together. Let's talk about Danny Duffy a little bit, because Josh talked about it last week on Baseball Tonight. Danny Duffy might be the most interesting player on the Royals roster right now, and that's regardless of if he succeeds or fails, because it matters. Everything Danny Duffy does matters. And last night he goes out, and the struggles just don't end. I mean, this is a night after Jake Junis pitched pretty well against that Yankees powerful lineup with Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez and Didi Gregorius, and Junis kept it under control for the most part. But Danny Duffy goes 4 innings, 7 hits, 5 earned runs, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts, and took 95 pitches to get through 4 innings. Here's Danny Duffy after the loss to the Yankees.
I gave up 5 runs in 4 innings tonight and threw 100 pitches, so no.
Was the slider a particular issue tonight? I mean, I know the one home run, the double by Sanchez, or just not finishing that pitch or anything?
Yeah, I wanted to bounce the one that he hit out. I was falling behind in the count, wasn't using my fastball enough. Throwing 95, 96, which means, you know, you have good stuff. Stuff doesn't translate into success. So I'm well aware of that. You could have the best arm on the planet and not execute your pitches. And I'm not doing that right now. And it's infuriating.
I know it's become a broken record to ask this, but where are you mentally after another outing like this?
I just want to help the team, man. I really, truly just want to help the team. I'm tired of going out there and getting my ass kicked. I really am. Every fifth day, you know, and it's miserable. It's miserable. That being said, sometimes you're just not special at something, and right now I'm not special at pitching. And what are you gonna do about it? Are you gonna run from it? Are you gonna do some phantom DL crap? What are you gonna do? No, I'm not gonna go on the DL. I feel great. Do they want to talk about the bullpen? I don't know. It's not my decision. I want to help this team. I want to help this team win. I'm not doing it right now. I am pitching awful right now. And, I don't know what else to say. I'm throwing 95, 96. I'm not trusting my heater. I'm leaving my changeup up. third pitch of the game, fourth pitch of the game, whatever it was, to Hicks. You know, out over, belt high, just puts his bat out there. It's horrible. It's just brutal. Talk is cheap. I'm terrible right now. It's awful. I'm sick of it, man. It's terrible.
Danny Duffy's comments after his performance against the Yankees Saturday night at Kauffman Stadium. A couple of things to dive into there. Danny Duffy's one of the most brutally honest about everything that goes on in his career, especially when he's not pitching well. And like I said, Josh Briscoe, I thought, had a great tweet last night talking about how much Danny Duffy puts a human face on what he's going through. And yes, he's open for criticism. That's part of the game. He knows what he signed up for. He makes a lot of money to play baseball. The criticism is going to be there. But here's a couple of things that I digested after listening to that soundbite. He goes, no, I'm not going on the DL. I'm not coming up with some phantom injury to go on the DL. We all, those of us who cover the game, and even a lot of people who are fans of the game, know what that means. When a pitcher is really struggling, it happens to pitchers in particular, but it happens to position players as well. When a pitcher is struggling the way Danny Duffy is, inevitably, and I saw this a lot back in the mid-2000s, inevitably the team will make an announcement either after the game or the next day. Player X is going on the 15-day disabled list with lower back tightness or shoulder stiffness or something. Something that they showed no signs of during the game. We know how it works in Major League Baseball. Phantom injuries are reported all the time. Give a guy a break. Give a guy a chance to collect himself. Call up a minor leaguer who's probably not as good. This happens in Major League Baseball. Probably more than we know, but it happens. So Danny Duffy's out there and says, I'm not coming up with some phony phantom injury and going on the DL, which is the proper thing to do. He's owned up to it. I'm not hurt. I'm throwing 95, 96, but I don't trust it right now. I'm leaving my changeup up and out over the plate like the pitch to Hicks. Not hurt. And we've all speculated, and maybe I shouldn't say we. I don't want to speak for everybody. I have thought, going back to that last spring training start when he left early, that maybe he might be hurt. But Danny says, look, I'm throwing 95, 96. I am not hurt. I'm not going on the DL with some made-up injury. The other part about that, and this should come as no surprise, he says, I don't know if it's, you know, if it's a bullpen thing. Maybe I need to go to the bullpen. I'm paraphrasing here. That's up to somebody else to make that decision. And we're there. I think we're there with Danny Duffy. I don't know if we're going back to Omaha right now. I don't think we're at that point yet, but I think we're at the bullpen moment. The decision is who you're going to bring up, or are you going to start Brad Keller in a spot start? Are you going to bring up somebody from AAA? There's not a lot of guys down there. Maybe Trevor Oakes comes back again. I don't know. But we're at that point with Danny Duffy where the Royals have to be thinking it and deciding on it, and we have to think about it too. The bullpen, which is a disappointment for not only Danny Duffy, not only the Royals, but for the fans, because Danny Duffy is true blue Royal. If you want to meet a guy who's true blue Royal, it's Danny Duffy. He interacts with people online, especially kids who are going through tough times, whether it's an illness. If somebody tweets something at Danny, hey, you know, going through something tough, he's there. He's the bury me a Royal guy. He invented the hashtag bury me a Royal. When all the trade talk was going on in the offseason, he tweeted out, I want to be a Royal. I want to be here. I want to be in Kansas City. And that's why it's hard to consider that things are, well, it's not hard to consider. The performance dictates what's going to happen. And Danny Duffy's probably going to have to spend some time in the bullpen to get it figured out. Because if you're throwing 95, 96, and you're not trusting it, and you're leaving your changeup up in the zone, and the other teams will tell you how you're pitching. Al Fitzmaurice, former Royal, good friend of mine, always told me the other batters will tell you how you're doing. The video's not going to tell you everything about how you're doing. Your pitching coach is not going to tell you how you're doing. He's going to try, The opposing batters will tell you how you're doing. And the opposing batters this season are telling Danny Duffy his stuff isn't very good right now. And he's going to have to take some time to figure it out. And that's probably going to be in the bullpen. I'm not going to be shocked if we see an announcement this week that Danny Duffy's going to spend some time in the bullpen and miss a start. Maybe two starts. I have to consider who they're calling up and what happens with that. But I'm not going to be surprised if the Royals come out this week and say Danny Duffy's going to the bullpen, he's going to miss a start. And that announcement would probably, my guess is, that wouldn't come until Wednesday or Thursday because he's not going to be able to work out of the bullpen after Saturday's start until at least Wednesday. But I'm not going to be surprised if that happens. So you also take out the end of that quote by Danny Duffy after the game where he says, I'm pitching awful right now. I don't know what else to say. It's horrible. This is brutal. Talk is cheap. I'm terrible right now. It's awful. I'm sick of this blank, which was bleeped out. It's terrible. It would be one thing if this just happened against the New York Yankees on one night. Because the Yankees are the best in the league at hitting home runs. But it's happened against everybody. Going back to his first start of the season, 5 earned runs in 4 innings against the White Sox. Not a good team. Against Cleveland, 3 earned runs in 5 2/3. Okay. Had the great start against Seattle, but still went 5 1/3. Great start against Toronto. Then the wheels start coming off again. 6 earned runs in 4 2/3 against the Tigers, who have some good hitters, but are not that great a team. 4 earned runs again against the White Sox. 5 earned runs against the Red Sox in 6 2/3. 1 against Baltimore, a terrible team. 9 earned runs against Cleveland in his previous start, and then 5 earned runs against the Yankees. This is happening over and over and over again.
But who do you replace him with?
That's the conundrum for the Royals.
I know that people have talked about maybe stretching out Brad Keller and that he has starter-like stuff, and he's going to be on the roster all year because he's a Rule 5 guy, and you can just throw him back into the bullpen, and maybe they flip spots there. But to stretch him out, you're also going to need a guy who you can piggyback start, you know, or piggyback him, go 3 2/3, and then have a guy go hopefully 3 1/3, and then get into the bullpen. But all the rest of the names I was looking at on the 40-man roster, not looking good.
No. I mean, you look down at Omaha, Trevor Oaks, you know, the guy.
Trevor Oaks could.
He's been up here before. Mm-hmm. But you're not seeing a, you know, Heath Philmyer's not on the 40-man, or is on the 40, but he's not pitching particularly well. You know, Clay Buchholz is gone. Josh Stamatz is a bullpen guy now. They've decided that. He's a bullpen guy. Just not seeing the names of guys who are going to come up here from Omaha, other than Trevor Oaks. But again, like a Brad Keller spot start. But then, like you said, you have to piggyback. He's not going 6 7 innings.
And Brad Keller's your long guy kind of out of the bullpen, so there's not.
And your 8th inning guy.
Right. maybe Jason Adam in the 8th?
Yeah, you could do
I
that.
I mean, what we're doing right now is pretty sad because we're pushing around, you know, lawn chairs on the Titanic, that old cliche or term or whatever. But, I mean, what else are you? I know hardcore baseball nerds, like, really get into this stuff, and it's just such a weird season already, and it's not even the end of May. Like, this feels so 2005 to me in a different way, though.
Yeah.
Because they're not nearly that bad.
There are talented guys here.
Yeah, there are guys who can play.
2005 was...
We've talked about how those teams were so devoid of talent in every fashion. This team certainly has major league players on it. That team did not, save 2 guys.
Maybe.
But, yeah, I don't know. Duffy's been really bad. I just don't know if... To me, putting him in the bullpen is the obvious answer, but I don't even know if that would solve things. I think a lot of the problem still lies in the guy's head. I do appreciate that he's a stand-up guy and will answer the questions and that he's able to take the responsibility for going out there and not performing. I think all of that's great, but I also wonder how much of that hurts his psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say I'm not
to get
saying,
battered around like this,
right?
Which and, is very. Look,
and then just to go and reinforce it and be like, I'm terrible. Like every time you go out, you're like, well, I'm going to be. I caught myself, but be pretty bad,
right?
So. For me, and especially, like I said, I know that Danny walked away from baseball once. He obviously had his off-the-field issues and is just kind of a different cat. So
right.
I could see him really getting into his own head and freaking out, kind of.
Well, to me, it reminds me a little bit of, and this is probably an unfair comparison, but it reminds me a little bit of Jeremy Offelt. When you talk about the awful teams the Royals had, Jeremy was a starter. He was okay at times. But he had, you know, he had the fingernail issues and, you know, the split nail issues and all kinds
blisters.
Of stuff. Yeah, all kinds of stuff going on. Blisters. He had to soak his fingers in pickle juice, and I talked to him about this. And you know, at one point, he was going to be the opening day starter for the Royals. It came down to a coin flip between Jeremy Offelt and Runelvis Hernandez. And I was at spring training when this decision was going down in Surprise, Arizona. Tony Pena said, can't decide who's going to be the opening day starter. It's either Jeremy Offelt or Runelvis Hernandez. And he called both players into it. And I know what unfolded because I know people who were in the room. And it was only, I think it was three. Came down to a coin flip. And Jeremy Offelt was not the opening day starter. And eventually, the Royals turned him into a bullpen guy. Or they kept flipping back and forth, and then they traded him. And then guess what? He became one of the best bullpen guys in Major League Baseball with both the Cincinnati Reds, and then he went on to win World Series championships with the San Francisco Giants, pitched against the Royals in 2014 before retiring. And so maybe that's the path for Danny Duffy. You cannot look, you cannot wave the white flag on a left-handed starter who throws 95 to 96. But if you want the 30,000-foot view, if you want the 2 and 3 years down the road view, that's a distinct possibility. If it's routinely taking you 95 to 100 pitches to get through a fifth inning or even into a fifth inning, that doesn't strike me as long-term starter. And I hate to say that. I want Danny Duffy to be great. I think we all do. As fans, you want your pitcher, you want your stud pitcher, you want your star player, you want the good guy on the team to be a long-term starter. But my 30,000-foot view up in the air, or my looking down the tunnel at 2 and 3 years, my bullpen guy.
Yeah, the flip side is that this is a lost season, though, and that you leave him out there as a starter and just find out what he has. Maybe that's what the Royals are trying to do, but it's obviously not the best strategy. I know that Ned Yost and Dayton Moore are both on record saying that there's something to be said for winning games and learning how to win when you have guys who are developing, but there aren't really any young guys on the team. Everybody talks about, you know, Hunter Dozier or Chesler Cuthbert. They're upper, you know, I mean, they're in their mid-20s. They're not prospects anymore. There aren't any on the team. Whit Merrifield's like 28. So I don't understand what the Royals, I guess, what the point of it is.
Yeah, and they're like I said, there's not a lot of other options. But we're at the point of Danny Duffy's probably going to spend some time in the bullpen. And you're going to have to get, you know, other guys are going to have to fill in, whether it's Trevor Oakes, whether it's Brad Keller, spot starting here and there, piggybacking, whatever you, however the Royals want to line it up, that looks like where we are. Unless they go and look at the video from the last two games and find some magical thing that he's not doing or is doing wrong, that he's doing right or is doing wrong, there's not a lot of solutions other than going to the bullpen or we just keep running him out there. One of the two. Not a lot of options. And if they knew, you know, they had the discussion, you know, he went back to the windup at the beginning of the season. Then he said, well, he was tipping his pitches, so back out of the stretch. I don't know why they went back to the windup in the first place. Because working out of the stretch seemed to be working for him last year better than working out of the windup, so I don't know why they made that switch. But, yeah, we're probably looking at a trip to the bullpen right now. And I think everybody knows it, and it's not going to be a surprise when it happens. All right, we will take a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. You can follow me on Twitter at Brad K. Porter. I got a rainy Sunday, so a good time to just curl up next to the radio, listen to the show, or if you got to get out and run some errands, keep us on in the car, put us on your app. If you get a few minutes where you can get outside, take the app with you. Go to 810WHB.com. We'll take a quick timeout. It's Sports Sunday live from the Rally House Studios on Sports Radio 810WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. Sports Radio 810WHB in Kansas City and booming 50,000 watts across the Midwest. My name is Brad Porter. I'll be your host. Follow me on Twitter at Brad K. Porter. Jed Marshall is our producer today as we broadcast live from the Riley House Studios. For the rain that is out there, it's kind of in and out all day today. Tweet from Jeff Penner, 41 Action News, who fills in for Gary Lezak on the Border Patrol weekday mornings with Stephen St. John, Nate Bukaden, and Jake Gutierrez. Jeff is always quite funny. What he just posted 11 minutes ago, I think this is hilarious. No offense, Jeff. It hit me funny reading this. So Jeff Penner, 41 Action News, tweet, great weather for the yards and farms as periods of rain move across the area. The Royals get their game in, or the Royals may get their game in, as it will not rain every hour today. So it will not rain every hour today, just some of the hours today. Jeff, if you could tell me which of the hours, I would appreciate that. If you've got outdoor activities going on today. So we were talking about the Royals in the last segment and Danny Duffy and maybe the thought process moving forward on whether or not he takes a detour into the bullpen. I think it's as close to that as it's ever been. Earlier this week with, was Soren Petro, right? Bob Nightingale, Major League Baseball reporter, joined Soren to talk about Dayton Moore and Eric Hosmer, and thought we'd play this for you and get the thoughts of, I was kind of like the national guys never know as much as the local guys, but they have a different view and they talk to different people, which is why I like hearing from people like Bob Nightingale. So here's Bob Nightingale talking with Soren Petro earlier this week.
What I was told, I may be wrong in this, but I thought that was almost a fact that Kansas City ownership denied permission. They never gave permission to Dayton Moore to even interview there. Certainly it would have been his job. I mean, who wouldn't want the guy, particularly his ties with John Cherholz? So I'm almost positive on this. It was strictly, and I don't know whether Dayton Moore would have left or not, but he never got permission to talk to him. And certainly he would have got a huge raise and everything else. And you look at that farm system, you got a chance to look like a genius, you know, which is happening with Alex Anthopoulos with the Braves now. But I think ownership completely blocked him. You know, whether he would have left or not, I don't know. But he never had the choice.
What were the Braves waiting on then for so long?
I think they're waiting for Kansas City to change their mind, the ownership, and say, hey, can't you have permission? And just looking around at different things, it's like, you might as well. Remember, not at the time, too. It was like investigations with their own GM, John Capitola, investigations in John Hart. So they had so many things going on at that time. So I think that was a big delay. But I really do believe, too, from talking to Braves officials, that, I mean, the only guy they really, really wanted was Dayton Moore. And I think they kept waiting, you know, what would it take? Do we change job titles? And then and I never had this confirmed. There was also talk that, okay, if you want to talk to Dayton Moore or hire him, you know, you got to give us X in return. And we want money, we want players, that sort of thing. And I'm not sure that part's true, but I heard that through the grapevine.
That was discussed, like what the compensation would be.
Exactly, yeah.
So, wow.
I mean, just the Braves, you know, valued him so much. And like I said, who wouldn't?
Right.
But, yeah, particularly the his roots there and just the tie-in with John Cherholz. And I said, I don't know whether, you know, I talked to Dane this spring. I don't know whether he would have left or not. You know, he's got a son in high school there and everything else. He absolutely loves Kansas City and works well with ownership. But it certainly would have been very enticing, appealing to leave for that franchise with so many prospects coming. In the fact in Kansas City, Yeah, he already rebuilt once. You know, it's not fun to rebuild again. It's not fun to go through what he's going through right now.
Not fun to rebuild the first time and having to do it again, a bigger challenge. That's Bob Nightingale speaking with Seren Petro earlier this week on Sports Radio 810 WHB. One more one more soundbite from Bob Nightingale, and then we'll kind of regather what we're going to talk about here with Dayton Moore and the challenges that lie ahead for him. Here is Bob Nightingale talking about how the contract went down with Eric, and about the contract for Eric Hosmer.
You know, I was talking to people that were very close with Hosmer.
Right.
There's a lot of information was coming from Hosmer indirectly.
Okay.
And the thing was, hey, the Padres have 7 years at 140. You know, wow, okay, they're really serious. But, you know, his heart's still in Kansas City. And KC, you know, offered, you know, 147. And I was very skeptical about the KC part. San Diego's really made sense. And sure enough, San Diego came out right away and said, yeah, we have offered 7 years. Not quite at 140, but close.
Yeah.
You know, Kansas City was quiet on that. And then, you know, as it turns out, when he signs his contract for that, you know, at 144, you know, then you go, okay, what happened to KC here? The guy wanted to stay in Kansas City. And as it turns out, that, you know, last year at some point, he was offered, you know, right around that figure, and it was rejected. He hit free agency. And then in the offseason, apparently they had offered right around 7 years at 147 without ownership approval. It was like, hey, we're thinking about this number. How about this? And so Eric Hosmer thought that, okay, they're offering seven at 147. It was really a number, you know, thrown out by, you know, the, some, you know, I'm not saying specifically 147, but right there that Dan Moore had said, how about this number? Ownership did not go for it. So he thought it was a firm offer. It was not. It was a firm offer right around that number when he was still with the Royals that he rejected. So I think that's where the discrepancy was in the Kansas City offer. San Diego's, you know, was right there all along.
Yeah.
But I think when KC got ownership and said, no, we're not doing that, that's when it became a very easy decision for Hosmer. Because he really, I didn't realize until spring training, talking to him at length, just how badly he wanted to stay in Kansas City. And I think if it had been close, he certainly would be a Royal today.
If it had been close, he'd still be a Royal today, Eric Hosmer. Would it make a difference on this year's team? Probably not. Would Mike Moustakas have come back? How would that situation have worked out? I don't know. Here's the thing that I took away from that. The delicate balance that Dayton Moore, or really any general manager in Major League Baseball, or any sport for that matter, it's a delicate balance between what you discuss with agents, players, other people in your front office, and how much you tell the owner. How much does the owner want to know? How much does the owner have to know? The owner doesn't have to know everything unless he really wants to. He or she really wants to. But owners pay general managers and front office people to make smart decisions. I don't need to know every roster move that we make. But the ones that the owners kind of have to know about are the big ones. So did Dayton Moore throw out a figure to Eric Hosmer or to his agent Scott Boras in the 140 to 147 range? And then Eric Hosmer believes that this is it. This is the offer. I've got the offer. And maybe it wasn't firmed up yet. Did Dayton Moore believe he had the authority to throw out the number and have it signed off on without checking first? I don't think anybody knows how that works out in the Royals front office. Is there a dollar figure? This is like when you're spending big money in your life and you want to buy a new shirt. Let's say you're married. You want to buy a new shirt. You don't really have to discuss much about that. You go buy the new shirt, new pair of pants, new shoes, whatever it is. If you want to buy a car, want to buy a house, want to get a new apartment, want to move to a new city, those things have to be discussed and signed off on. So what's the dollar figure that David Glass needs to, or Dan Glass, whoever's making that decision, what's the number that you have to run up the flagpole to the owner first? How big does the number have to be? Is it 50 million? Is it 80 million? Is it 100 million? After hearing what Bob Nightingale said to Seren Petro, you can be damn sure $140 million better be run up the flagpole first. And maybe this was just Dayton Moore shooting the breeze. Hey, you know, I think I can get you 140, maybe 147. This is what I'm thinking about. This is the framework of the contract I'm thinking about. And maybe Eric Hosmer and Scott Boras misunderstood it as a firm offer. I mean, if I'm Eric Hosmer and I really want to stay in Kansas City and I hear that number in those years, yeah, okay, let's do it. I'm on board. Wait a minute. Wasn't really a firm offer. I didn't run it all the way up to the owner's office yet. Of course, that would be in Arkansas. So that's a little bit strange. The other part about it is, concerning Dayton Moore, is Bob Nightingale said that David Glass would never sign off on an interview with the Atlanta Braves and didn't want to come up with didn't really want to accept anything they offered in return, whether they traded players or a pile of cash, whatever it was, which is a little bit. I mean, it's great if you're a Royals fan. It's disappointing if you really like Dayton Moore, because you really need to let people explore their options and opportunities. Case in point, Sporting Kansas City. I know for a fact, and it's been published, but I also know this from talking to people. A few years ago, Peter Vermes, they were coming after, the LA Galaxy were coming after Peter Vermes. They wanted him. Chris Klein is the boss out in LA, and he played with Peter Vermes in Major League Soccer back in the old Wizards days, and they're good friends. Chris Klein wanted Peter Vermes. And no restrictions have been put on Peter Vermes. Peter Vermes said, not interested. I'm building my thing in Kansas City. We're going to build this youth academy. We've got our new, at that time, the Swope practice facility was in. The new stadium was going up over in Kansas City, Kansas, Children's Mercy Park. I'm going to build my youth academies. This is my thing, and I have total control over my players and my team. I want to do this in Kansas City. Now, the next call that's coming, or that's already come, is, as we found out, U.S. Soccer has talked to Peter Vermes in the past about becoming the next head coach. They're doing their due diligence. Did Sporting KC tell U.S. Soccer, no, you can't talk to our coach? And I don't know Peter Vermes' contract. He may have a clause in his contract that says if somebody calls, you have to let me listen. But Peter Vermes will have that talk at some point, and he'll make his decision. But not letting Dayton Moore interview with the Atlanta Braves, that bothers me a little bit, just because knowing Dayton a little bit on the personal side, I would like to see him get the opportunity to explore every chance he gets. Here's the other and the third takeaway from that. So Dayton Moore, since he's going to stay in Kansas City, since he wasn't apparently allowed to go to the Braves, now you're at the next stage of your rebuilding project, or I guess your second rebuild. That takes a long time. That's not a 3- and 4-year deal. And I don't believe, if they get this turned around again, if they draft properly, if they make smart acquisitions at the trade deadline this year to help restock their farm system, which, as we've discussed, if you're trying to give Danny Duffy some time in the bullpen, who are you going to call up? They don't have anybody. They don't have a lot of options. So by the time you get through a second rebuild in 5, 6, 7 years, maybe 8 years, the first one took a long time, Ned Yost probably isn't going to be here. This organization is going to look very different by the time you get to the end of a second rebuild, if you can get to it, if you can keep the players you need to keep, if you can infuse the farm system with talent that above single A handful of guys in double A doesn't have a whole lot. I mean, I follow Clint Scholes on Twitter, Baseball Prospectus, every night. He's writing about the guys in Lexington and Wilmington who are putting up great numbers. Those numbers don't mean anything right now. Those players are years away. And they may not translate to the major leagues. It's still a long way to go, this rebuilding process that the Royals are currently in. It's going to be painful. It's going to stink. I'm going to watch every night because I'm a Royals fan. And I, kind of have to keep up with the team a little bit. It's part of your job, right? And I enjoy watching Royals baseball, even when they're not playing well, because I like baseball. I'm a baseball fan. But it's going to stink. It's going to stink out loud. It's going to be a chore to convince yourself to spend money on tickets to go to the ballpark. For me, I like going to the ballpark. But I'm probably not going to go to as many games unless I'm working. I got a day off. That choice becomes easier for everybody in Kansas City and the Midwest, whether to go or not to go. Because, look, the Royals ticket prices, that's a good value. For a major league product, the Royals have tickets all up and down the price range. It's a good value. Go to the ballpark. Spend a night at the K. Meet some new people. I always meet new people at the K. It's one of my favorite things about going to the ballpark. People sitting behind you. People sitting in front of you. Strike up a conversation. It usually starts with, God, I can't believe that play. Can't believe that pitch. This strike zone is horrible. And then it's, where are you from? Nah, I'm from Gladstone. Really? I'm from Liberty. This guy over here is from St. Joe. But it's going to be tougher. The Royals make it tougher to make that decision to get those tickets and go to the ballpark. And that's going to happen for the next 2 and 3 years. It's going to happen for the next 2 to 3 years. It's just the way it is. It's going to be painful. And Dayton Moore is going to be here. And I have no doubt that if Dayton Moore stays, he's going to put every ounce of energy into it. Right now, it's hard to watch. All right, here's a fun topic that came out last week that we're going to talk about in our next segment. I promise it's going to be fun. It got me excited because I'm excited about this sport. I think Jed Marshall is too. So the tweet that sent Kansas City sports fans' tongues wagging all week last week from one of our good friends. We're going to talk about that next. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is producing here in the Rally House Studios, and you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the rain has stopped momentarily, but Jeff Penner from 41 Action News tweeted out a few minutes ago, it's not going to rain every hour today. I don't know what to make about that, but Jeff, I'm just giving you a hard time. This is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is producing here as we are live in the Rally House Studios. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Kurt Heelan from NBCSports.com will join us, talk some NBA playoffs, and another very important question to ask him about the NBA concerning us locally. And then around 11:30, give or take, Josh Briscoe is going to join us in the studio. And the conversation could go a thousand different directions, but he'll be leading into baseball tonight, which starts at noon. And then we have Major League Soccer coming up at 1 o'clock. Sporting KC on the road at Minnesota United FC. Yeah. Sporting's been off for 10 days. And like you know what, like when baseball has the random Thursday off, normally an off day in baseball happens on a Monday. But, like, sometimes you have a Thursday off and it just feels weird because you're in the middle of the week and you want a baseball game to be on.
Sure.
When Sporting goes 10 days without a game, it's just like, wow, it seems like a month and a half since they played.
It does seem weird. Soccer is such, like, a once-a-week thing. It's almost like football in that regard. So, yeah, when there's a 10-day off, it's almost like a Thursday night game and then having that extra weight.
We had Andy Edwards on yesterday from NBCSports.com, and he said Sporting was the last – maybe one of the last two teams in Major League Soccer to actually have a weekend off this season.
Which is nice, since they've had to travel, go from Atlanta to Minnesota.
And they did okay in Minnesota last year. They lost a game and tied a game. Or drew, pardon me. Drew.
Yeah, get your soccer lexicon.
I got it, yeah.
Correct.
I did a soccer show on TV for many years, and whenever I made a mistake in my soccer parlance, I heard about it.
I would hope so.
Leave me alone. How about the fact that I love the game?
Did you watch the FA Cup?
I saw Chelsea's PK against Man U, but I did not see the end.
All you needed to see. I mean, there was more nuance to it, of course.
Right.
But all that mattered, Chelsea, 1-0, FA Cup. Well, Ass Talkin' Rob and I, many tweets, many Instagram posts. Very happy.
Jake Gutierrez will be disappointed. Is he into the FA Cup?
I know he's a Man U fan, so
right,
I'd assume anytime they're playing for a trophy, he'd be pretty interested.
All I know is my Liverpool team is playing for Champions League.
Champions League? Yeah, does anyone care about that?
It's just a billion-dollar game.
Never. I have not heard of it. I'll have to do some more research, I guess.
So I have Sporting and Minnesota United FC, which is a very complicated name. That's at 1 o'clock. Final Whistle with Dave Borchardt at 3 o'clock. which is the post-game show, which, as we clarified, happens after the final whistle of the game.
Oh.
Yes.
I see. Clever.
Yes. And then Josh Briscoe will have Royals-Yankees post-game coverage with baseball tonight somewhere around 4-ish. Just depends when the game gets over. And then the NBA tonight, Rockets and Warriors. Game 3, series tied 1-1. Going back to Golden State. All right, so let's pick it up there with NBA, because the tweet that sent Kansas City buzzing last week for folks who either love the NBA or want the NBA back to Kansas City, Jarrett Sutton, our good friend, former Missouri basketball star, Oak Park High School grad, scouts for the NBA, SEC television network analyst, tweeted this out. NBA executive, quote, "Jarrett, going to be real honest with you. Kansas City will get an NBA team at some point. It's a real thing. I've heard from multiple sources. Just a matter of time. Seattle and Kansas City, to me, are most valuable markets for league expansion when it makes sense." Okay, here's Jarrett Sutton with Cody Tapp talking about that very subject.
"We've known all along that Seattle was going to be in play if the league was ever going to expand. We knew Seattle was probably going to be the first market to get a team. When you go to the second part of that as who will get a team, Kansas City, Louisville, and Las Vegas are the three markets that come to mind. But I've had this conversation. It's not just one executive. It's been multiple people I've talked to over the last 3 years. And anytime we're talking about players, anytime we're talking about draft pick, potential, all these things about players, you also have those casual conversations about how the league is going, what's driving it, all those things. And I always bring up what people think about Kansas City and how people view that market at the NBA level. And the reality is it's overwhelming how many people have told me that Kansas City is a realistic possibility for a market to land an NBA team, whether that's relocation or expansion. I believe it's going to be probably relocation before expansion. That's what I would put my money on. But the reality is I think people need to start realizing that this is a real thing, that people have talked about it, that it is in people's minds, that it's not just, you know, me preaching it because I'm biased, obviously, having grown up in Kansas City, but it is continuing to grow. It's continuing to expand. It's a great sports town. Obviously, it's very important that the airport comes to life and gets built. I think that's very crucial that we start seeing Kansas City continue to develop as a city, because this becomes more and more, I think, optimistic and more realistic that Kansas City could end up with an NBA franchise. With that, timing back to your original question, I'm not sure of, but I do know that it is a topic of conversation. When you talk about where the league is at, where it could go, Kansas City is in that conversation.
All right, that's Jarrett Sutton with Cody Tapp earlier this week on the possibility of the NBA returning to Kansas City. And I believe Kevin Keatsman had messaged with Kathy Nelson from the Sports Commission, president of the Kansas City Sports Commission, after that came out. And she said, always happy to be in the conversation. We're talking about bringing a pro sports team to town. Sprint Center's great. So here's the initial reaction when I read what Jarrett Sutton tweeted. Initial reaction, yes! I really want the NBA in Kansas City. I love the NBA. My kids love the NBA. I would love to be able to go to Sprint Center and watch the NBA. If LeBron comes to town, let's go. Golden State Warriors, let's go. Rockets, come on. Thunder, Russell Westbrook. There's always a player on an opposing team to go see, even if those teams aren't very good. Most teams, anyway, have a player that's worth going to see. So that's my reaction. Yes, NBA, Kansas City, let's go. Buy the Kings name back. Go to the old school uniforms. Let's go. Let's do it. Then the realist in me comes out to kind of rein in the enthusiasm, rein it in a little bit. I hate to do that to myself because I really want the NBA to come to Kansas City or the NHL. Pick one. Whatever you're interested in, pick one. The NBA, I would really love. So your stumbling blocks are numerous. One, there's been no discussion from the commissioner about this yet on if a team wants to relocate or if they want to expand. So that has to happen first. Either the NBA has to decide we're expanding, or a team in another city has to say, we don't want to be here anymore. What will you give us to move? So those things have to happen just to get the ball rolling. Next thing, if you're going to expand, do you have a handy local billionaire who loves the NBA? No. As Sam Mellinger accurately tweeted out earlier this week, the billionaires in Kansas City spend a lot of money on arts and education and things that are not related to sports.
What a bunch of buffoons.
Ah, what a waste.
Culture and arts, man.
What
waste.
A waste.
Making our city better.
So we don't have a local billionaire who's probably going to buy an NBA franchise. Unless Cliff and Mike Illig and the Sporting KC guys, Rob Heineman, unless that group wants to get together or put together another group If they want to do it, great. What they've done with Sporting has laid a foundation for how you build a franchise from scratch or rebuild an existing franchise into a new image. So Cliff Illig, Mike Illig, if you want Rob Heineman, if you got some guys you want to get together, throw a couple of billion bucks together to get a team, great. So that's another thing that has to happen, which that's another big thing. You also have to get Sprint Center to agree to give up a minimum of 41 dates a year. And Sprint Center is one of the busiest venues in the country. It routinely ranks in the top 10 in the world in terms of ticket sales, performances, those sorts of things. So would Sprint Center and AEG, more importantly, who runs Sprint Center, would they be willing to block off 41 dates a year to play NBA games? And that's just for your regular season. 16 teams make the playoffs. That's another 3 to 4 games just for the first round, 3 to 4 games for the second round. Dare to dream, you get to the conference finals or the NBA finals. Now you're talking 50 to 60 dates a year. That's complicated. There are so many moving parts that have to come together, and this is nothing new. Whatever, pick a city that might want it. And then you're going to have to battle the other cities. Louisville? Why did Louisville come into the conversation? Seattle, beats I get. Me. Seattle wants an NBA team back.
Seattle deserves a team.
Yeah, they deserve a team. They didn't deserve to lose the first one. Neither did Kansas City.
I don't know about that.
Well, we had bad.
We'll disagree.
It wasn't run very well at the end. So that's. I was a 13-year-old kid or whatever, and I accurately deduced that they had poor ownership at the time. So, but Seattle and Kansas City, top of the list. I'm all for it. Let's get going. Gambling in Kansas before an NBA team returns, but I want the NBA. Speaking of the NBA, Kurt Heelan from NBCSports.com is going to join us in the next segment. We'll take a quick timeout. My name is Brad Porter. Jed Marshall is producing. You're listening to Sports Sunday live from the Riley House Studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.